The drama is unfolding. Maharaj Prataparudra, somehow by great fortune, had the desire to meet Mahaprabhu. Maharaj Prataparudra desired to meet Mahaprabhu. And then in the association of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because of his fertile heart, fertile and faithful heart, he immediately accepted Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and requested very strongly, begged Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to arrange a darshan for him to see Mahaprabhu. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thought it was not... going to occur due to the strictness of Mahaprabhu's principles of renunciation. But he said he would try. Then Mahaprabhu returned to Puri, and indeed he did try, and he got a no. No! It was interesting that he asked for the bhaya dhan, the gift of fearlessness. Because indeed in this world, what to speak of indeed with someone, the exalted Supreme Person, most exalted person is the Supreme Lord, one really needs a gift of fearlessness. It cannot come by our own strength. That is why fear is at the root of every conditioned soul's existence. Because we are here, and although we may try to convince ourselves that everything is all right, and that I'm strong, and I'm confident, but actually in the depths of our own consciousness, everyone is feeling incompetent and tiny and insignificant. And there's a good reason why we secretly all feel tiny and insignificant, because why? Well, yes, indeed. Indeed, indeed, we are. Of course, we don't like that feeling, do we? There were, one time I walked into a professor's office in Kuala Lumpur. And, university professors tend to have little sayings and cartoons in their offices. For some reason, it's a characteristic of intellectuals to like cartoons. Did your father have those?
Definitely.
It's peculiar. Anyway, this one professor had one saying on his desk, actually, that actually affected my life. I presume you want to hear what it was. It was, I used to worry about what everyone was thinking about me until I realized no one was thinking about me. Everyone was thinking about themselves. And he had a second one there too, but it escaped my mind, but it was really a good one. He was brilliant. So Mahaprabhu refused to see King Prataparudra, and then Ramananda Roy came at the same time as Prataparudra Maharaj arrived in Puri. Ramananda Roy also arrived, and he told Mahaprabhu how kindly and affectionately and considerately and with such a serving mood the king treated him when he wanted to retire from government office to associate with Mahaprabhu and serve Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu said, when someone is as affectionate and it is so... as such an intimate relationship with a devotee like you, certainly Krishna will show his mercy on him. And then the next stage was the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to break the news to the king that Mahaprabhu wouldn't see him, and the king was devastated, and he thought, what is the use of my life if I don't have this? And this is the potency of the association of an exalted devotee such as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, is that the seed of devotion is planted in our heart. And what is that seed of devotion? In essence, it's Shraddha, and it's also Ruchi. It's faith that this is actually what is desirable in my life. A seed, it may be very small. And even one can say that even prior to the seed, a doubt forms the seed. And that doubt is, when we first associate with devotees, we may think, rather than this is true, we may think, I doubt my own consciousness. Maybe this is true. Rather than thinking, yes, I want this, but maybe it is true. Doubting our own sense of reality, our illusory sense of reality, because, and this is again the curse that every conditioned soul carries, is this illusory bubble that I am the center of existence, and we perceive something of reality, and we think that's part of reality that we perceive is reality itself. And this is called illusion. When you consider a part as everything, this is illusion. So when we doubt our own false concept, false yet firm concept of reality, that is the beginning of faith in a sense. We have to give up this to pick up something else. I cannot pick up this while my hand is full of something else, while my consciousness is fully convinced I have reality in the palm of my hand like a walnut. Then we can, what can, when the cup is full, what more can we pour in? So that doubt, in a sense, is a blessing. And then, as the cup becomes full through association, and Panchanga Bhakti especially, then true faith, which means that our understanding that this is real, that this inconceivable Supreme Personality of Godhead, this cowherd boy who was wandering around the land of Vrindavan, shoeless, who is so beautiful, and who has everyone in Braja just simply captivated and talking about him and thinking about him with his lotus eyes and his charming way of dealing and his expertise in dancing on the heads of serpents even. And he's drowning the residents of Vrindavan in pools of ecstasy by his different leelas, by his form, by his qualities, his charmingness, his beauty. And in our last class, because this 12th chapter that we're going to begin today, it actually ends in Mahaprabhu seeing the beauty of the Lord and becoming captivated by it. But we have a long way to go before we get there. But yes, that is the goal, to be completely, completely captivated, our consciousness enthralled, enchanted completely, absorbed in, completely in Krishna. And there's in Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasita bhavato mati, absorbed in tasting the sweet mellow of our relationship with Krishna. That, and in Vrindavan, we get we get glimpses of the, we can get glimpses of the fragrance of this, not only in Vrindavan, but everywhere. There are devotees, devotional service, and deities, and Bhagavatam reading, and service to Krishna, and the other items of devotional service. The fragrance of Krishna consciousness, of our relationship with Krishna, subtly enters in our consciousness, our mind, our chitta, our heart. And we want that because that fragrance is not of this world. And a taste, yes, it's real. That's the faith, which is the seed that grows into the plant of prema bhakti, the fruit of prema bhakti. And it grows through the platform of taste. And when that taste is flourishing, we don't want anything else. We, even if someone offered us the universe, here is the universe for your pleasure, every available pleasure within the universe. The devotees laugh at this. Even Mukti itself, the Mukti lady, is standing there with folded hands. Srila Bilamanga Thakur says, with folded hands saying, what can I do for you? And Bilamangala Thakur considers, what is the use, what is the value of mukti, freedom from all material suffering? What is the attractiveness of that when Krishna himself is so eagerly relating with you that he's personally coming and giving you milk? The universe, liberation, insignificant, tuchad, the Goswamis relishing that fragrance so fully, so captivated by it, were wandering around these very places, thinking that there is nothing in this world that is significant. Not in this world, but in that the external material, temporary, fleeting material world. So Maharaj Prataparudra was well on that path. And then when he thought he couldn't see Mahaprabhu, he was devastated and was, what is the use of my life? And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, when he saw that the king had actually so much faith and so much determination that he had invested his whole self, practically speaking, in this attainment. So much so that he thought, if I don't have this, I have nothing. Even though he was the king, and from the material perspective, he already had everything. He had invested his whole sense of self as, and I want this, I want Krishna prema. Like a baby crying for his mother. Okay, you hear that sound, and you could tell, if you have any experience at all, that the baby was not serious. It wasn't the serious cry of a baby. It was a playful cry, practically speaking. But when the baby cries and wants only mother, the mother comes, and no one else can hear or think of anything else because that cry is so powerful when it enters the ears. So when our chanting, as Prabhupada said, when it attains that quality of need, of greed, of desire, of necessity, when our life is like that and I want this and I don't want anything else, then Krishna is right there, practically speaking. So now, as one of the devotees pointed out, now we say, yes, I want Krishna. And Krishna says, oh, really? Well, let's see. And then he makes ways to turn up the flame, or sometimes to hold the mirror up. Because what do we really want? This is a question. What do we really want? So, the Savabhauma Bhattacharya was astonished to see the incredible investment, determined investment that the king had in attaining the shelter of the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. And he devised a plan, and that plan later will come to its fruition. And then Ramananda Roy, I think we're about ready for today. So the king, this is chapter 12, the king sent a letter from his capital of Cuttack to Savabhauma Bhattacharya, entreating him to attain the Lord's permission so that he could go and see him. So it's not exactly clear the temporal sequence, the time sequence on this, but this was going back and forth. The king had this on his mind continuously. I want this, I want this. And replying to the king's letter, Bhattacharya wrote that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not given his permission. And after this, the king wrote him another letter. He didn't say, anyway. In this letter, the king requested Savabhauma Bhattacharya. He pulled out the ultimate weapon. Please appeal to all the devotees associated with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and submit this petition to them on my behalf. So the king was very expert, influential, and determined. He said, if all the devotees associated with the Lord are favorably disposed towards me, they can submit my petition at the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, just imagine if we took that mood seriously. If we were so determined to get the mercy of the Lord that we wanted all the devotees, I mean each and every one of them, to be blessing our attempt. I mean everyone, each and every one of the devotees. I actually know devotees who not that many, but I can think of a few even without even really looking hard, that actually don't have any enemies. Isn't that astounding? But just imagine if all the devotees associated with the Lord are favorably disposed towards me, they can submit my petition at the lotus feet of the Lord. This, there's 2 points I would like to make here. So Maharaj Pataparudra had attachment to the devotees. He had attachment to the Lord and he had attachment to the devotees. He wanted to see each and every one of them. Hare Krishna. How important attachment to the devotees is described by Kapila Muni in the third canto of the Bhagavatam in the 25th chapter. Because attachment, we can't live in this world free from attachment, completely detached. Even there are some religious groups in India that want to be completely non-violent and completely not attached. And they even go to the extreme of being completely detached from their external garments. And they are digambar. They are clothed by the wind only, by the four directions. Can we be detached in this world? Can you be detached from breathing? Can you be detached from the and the blood circulating in your body? How much detachment can we actually have? And even if we decide we want to be completely detached, we become attached to being detached. Goodness in this world even leads to passion, because attachment comes to the objects of goodness. So Kapila Muni is describing that we should become attached. We must become attached if we want to advance. But what should we become attached to? We should become attached. Please listen. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, if we actually accept that there is nothing in the material world that can fulfill our desire for happiness and satisfaction, if we actually, in the depths of our consciousness, are convinced on this point, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, we have made the greatest step forward in spiritual life. So every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, the tendency to become attached, when applied to the self-realized devotees, it opens the door of liberation. And then he describes the symptom of such sadhus. They are tolerant. They are merciful. They are friendly to all living entities. Interestingly enough, Ajatra Shatrava, he has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all of his characteristics are sublime. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service. What does staunch mean? Not wishy-washy, but what's on the positive way? Positive definition? Strong, firm. Firm. Fixed, firm. Drita vrataha. Because this is what he wants. He wants to serve Krishna. And he doesn't want anything else. Naturally, he's firm. And his attachment to serving Krishna is intense. Naturally, it's firm. He engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. There is no wavering. Back and forth, back and forth. And for the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections. We may like this, we may not like that. We may this, that, this, attach it. But for the sake of Krishna's pleasure, he's willing to do anything. Accept something he normally wouldn't accept, reject something he normally wouldn't reject. For Krishna's pleasure, this is love, for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna is the center of his existence. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances with the Lord. Excuse me, with the world. Engage. So what does he do? So he gives up. And this obviously doesn't mean, obviously, that all the associates of Mahaprabhu were fully renounced sannyasis like that. But there are attachments. They were in one position or another position in the social world, in the world of occupational world. But their attachment was to Krishna fully. Ramananda Roy, the governor of Madras, was attached fully to Krishna. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was sitting there on a fine bedspread and bed with, and he had a hookah. Now, we can't imitate some of the activities of these exalted personalities, but these things are there. And in his mind, Gadadhar Pandit, when he saw him, he thought, what is this? This is a great devotee. In his mind, he criticized. And then Mukunda Datta, his friend, said to him, "Watch." And he recited a verse, Bahar Pidam, what was it? Ho Bakayam Stanakala Kutam Dighamstyadyap Lebhegatim Dati, glorifying Krishna, Kamvadaya Lum Sharanam Brajema. He recited a verse glorifying Krishna, and Pundarik Vidyaniti fainted and began rolling on the ground in ecstasy, just because his attachment was to Krishna. The externals we can't understand sometimes, but his attachment was to Krishna. And what does he do? What is his positive engagement, active engagement? And it isn't by force, and we can't do this by our will. From now on, I'm going to be like this. It has to be, we are driven. There's thinking, willing, and feeling. And out of the three, it's the feeling that drives the engine of the human being. Stoic philosophy isn't reality. It's the feeling that drives it. Because we want to feel. Bhakti is based on spiritual feeling. It's not a sentiment that is arising from our own mind, from our own. It's coming from the soul. It's coming from the spiritual realm. And this point will come up again soon. Bhakti is the spiritual energy. It's the shakti of Krishna, Ladini Sambit. It's a shakti of Krishna. So it is not something we can do by our willing or even by our material feeling. When we try to enter the kingdom of God by our material feeling, it doesn't work. We become sahajiyas. So this is what they do, driven by this intense feeling of love for Krishna and an intense attachment to wanting that connection continuously with Krishna and not wanting to be connected to the external energy, the world of Maya, of illusion, combining the senses with the sense object. Driven by the sense of attachment to Krishna, they're engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, Kapila Muni is saying. Engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. Their consciousness is engaged on a different level, as Prabhupada describes in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. He put it in contemporary terms. They are watching the pastimes of Krishna in the Goloka Vrindavan. They are connected and watching these pastimes in the television of their hearts, or even more contemporary, they're downloading them into their, and they have very high speed connection. They don't experience the sufferings of this material. Their consciousness is not exactly connected to this world, even though they're living in it, carefully living in it. And Prabhupada really showed that, how his consciousness was so clear and focused and always engaged. I had a university professor who used to say, it's okay to have your head in the clouds as long as your feet are on the ground. So Prabhupada's head was in Goloka Vrindavan or heart, but his feet were in Goloka Vrindavan also. This is this example, forget it. Okay, but he was so practical in Krishna's service. That's better, easier. But yet he was always filled with thoughts, Kapila Muni of saying, of my pastimes and activities. Oh, my mother, oh, virtuous lady, these are the qualifications of great devotees who are freed from all attachment. You must seek attachment to such holy men For this counteracts the pernicious, the evil, the wicked effects of material attachment. We tend to look at material attachments as if, oh, just a little bit is... But the problem with a little bit is it grows to a big bit. In the association of pure devotees, then famous Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Sambhado, in the association, so what do you do when you're associating with devotees on whatever level? Discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. And it is Bhavanti Ritkana Rasayanaha Kata. This Kata is Rasayan. It brings the soul to life. It's a medicine. Bhavoshado Shotabanam Brahmat. And it is pleasing to the heart. It is from a different realm. And by cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Shraddharatim bhaktim anukramishyati. Prema. Essence of the process. So the devotees... And Prabhupada also told me, and it was so dramatic. It was in Hong Kong, 1974, and we were standing outside the elevator in the Hong Kong Hilton, and we were waiting for the elevator. And at that time, I wasn't very well integrated. Been living in Hong Kong, that's my excuse for so many years. I wasn't so integrated in the society of ISKCON. And Prabhupada, we were standing there, and he said, if you do not make friendship with the devotees, because we are social by nature, you will be forced to make friendship with the devotees, and then you will not be able to follow the principles. The door opened of the elevator and Prabhupada walked in. And then you have to think, do I want to get into it? This is the choice we have to make all the time. Do we want to get in? Do we want to follow? Or do we want to go our own way? I got in. I didn't want to walk down the stairs after all. It's a long way down. So if all the devotees associated with the Lord are favorably disposed towards me, they can submit my petition at the lotus feet of the Lord. That was one point I wanted to make. And also this is what we have learned is the Brihaspati system of politics. Jagatrini Mataji pointed this out to me many years ago. Say if someone owes you money, right? So what you do, and you ask him for the money, he doesn't give it to you. So in the West, you either forget it, you bring him to court, you threaten him or something. But the Brihaspati method is you start telling everyone, this person owes me money, this person owes me money, this person owes me money, this person. And then suddenly... Everyone, you owe him money? Really? You owe him money? I heard you owe him money. I heard. They say, that's what they say in Vrindavan, they say that this is the most rain that has come for 150 years. I don't know how anyone knows that, those things, but they say that you owe him money, and everyone starts telling you this. Oh, you owe him money, you owe him money. And eventually you're so embarrassed, you do it. You fall into the pressure. And then, when I was reading Gopal Champu, I understood where this system came from. Brajendra Nandana Kumar himself. Because when he wanted to take out the cows, one day, Nanda Maharaj was in the assembly, and all the cowherd men, they used to gather together in some kind of assembly hall. And Krishna was talking to Nanda Maharaj's younger brother, whose name is Abhinandan. No, that's older brother. Sananda Nandana, what? Sananda, Nandana, and Abhinandana, where is he? It was Sananda, yes. Okay. Sananda, yes. So Krishna was like whispering to him, and they were smiling and talking. And Nanda Maharaj was looking at his younger brother, and after he called Sananda and said, "What were you talking about?" "Oh, no, 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 you don't need to know. This is one of the things you have to learn how to..." No, you don't need to know these kind of... "No, it's all right." No, really. What were you talking about? Second time you're allowed to do it. No. It's not actually, it wasn't very important. We were just talking. And you have to go like this a little. And when you're accusing someone of something, you want to criticize someone and he's right there, what you do is you point to him and you talk to someone else. "Look what he has done." And you can go like this a little bit to move the energy in that direction. And then you go... It's very systematic. There's so much rasa in it, actually. So Sunanda, Nanda Maharaj, of course, what were you talking about? You were talking so intimately with him. And Krishna never talks intimately and openly with me like that. Of course, you're his father and your instructions to him are very deep and very grave. Of course, he's very respectful. No, what were you talking about? Krishna was telling me he wants to be allowed to take out the cows. Okay, I'll think about that. First, I have to consult with Brajarani Mother Yashoda. So meanwhile, Upananda's wife has gone to Yashoda, because we know who's behind this one too, and said, "Your boy is so nice, even though he's just this big, he's so little. He's so expert. He's like the teal marking on the head of all the cowherd community. He's so expert at taking out cows. I think that you should let him take out the cows. He's not, even though he's young, I think he should be. We all think this." So from every direction, and Krishna's just sitting there. Of course, he has a halo not only from the top of his head, coming from everywhere. And in this way, it was finally decided. Did you tell? You didn't tell that pastime. Are you going to tell that, how he'd finally... Just a little bit, I'll tell it. The calves... So so they decided that Krishna would be allowed to take out the cows. So they picked an auspicious day, which is the Ashtami of the Shukla Paksha of the second part of the month, on the Gopashtami, and they picked an auspicious day. And they, for 3 days, no one did anything else but celebrate this auspicious occasion that Krishna was going to take out the cows for the first time. And the Brahmins performed sacrifices, charity was given. Nanda Maharaj gave Krishna a golden and a jeweled stick for the herding of the cows. And although Krishna had the stick, he never would use it on the cows. He would never hit them or anything. And Mother Yashoda came and put auspicious tilak upon his forehead. And then, only if I could do this, but Krishna made the sounds. I've heard it, but I can't even come close to doing it. I've heard some. The cowherd boys in Vrindavan can make these sounds. They have so many sounds. I see Krishna Prabhu from the Govardhan Palace. I asked him if he could do them. He said, "No, but in my village they used to be able to do them." And they had over 20 different sounds that they make, and they roll their tongues and this and that. Not like that. But, and they make these sounds. And the cows, more, It's more on that level. Who did that one? That was you, Sophie? But they do things like that, but there's like so many of them, and the cows, I've heard them do it, and the cows move, and they act according to the sounds that the boys make. They train, they communicate with the cows in that way. And so Krishna made the sounds to drive, move the cows forward. The moment had come. The ceremonies had been performed. He was holding the sacred stick. He had the sacred tilak. And the moment had come, and Krishna was going to herd the cows out of the village of Braja for the first time. Everyone was there watching. And Krishna made the sounds to make the cows move forward. And they wouldn't move because Krishna was behind them. They wouldn't move forward because everyone in Vrindavan, this is the qualification for being in Braj, is to be completely addicted to Krishna association. The flames of love for Krishna have long ago consumed every other aspect of one's existence, practically speaking. There's no question of material anything. It's just Krishna, Krishna, in different moods and different rasas, but with the same feeling of Krishna is ours, with this mamata. Krishna is mine. He's our village boy. We're from the same village. It's like one big family. Braj is one big family, and everyone knows each other. And just like in every village all over the world, everyone just talks about what goes on in the village, and we're supposed to gramya katha na shunime. We don't hear gramya katha because it's just the prattling, the rattling of all the this happened and this happened. But in Vrindavan, all that gramya katha was about Krishna, continuously and only. He had captivated everyone's consciousness by his unlimited charm and unlimited beauty and unlimited attractiveness. And the cows were completely attracted to him. And he had been taking the calves out before. Do you think the calves would let him take out the cows and them not go along? Do you think that Mother Yashoda would let him take out the cows and her not go along? Or the whole village wanted to go out. But yet, it was Krishna's time to take out the cows. And he made the sounds and they wouldn't move forward. And then Krishna himself started walking forward to the elder cowherd men. And then when he started walking forward, all the cows started following him. And they followed him and they followed him out of the village. Out of the village, and everyone was just captivated and just watching and watching, and their hearts were going. Different Goswami books describe the interactions of Mother Yashoda. She couldn't let them go. Balaram, you stand in front. Dham, Sudham on the sides. Vijay behind. You have to protect Krishna. You be careful, Krishna. Yes, mother. Go out another. You make sure you're in front, Balaram. This is love. It's out of control completely. It's completely spontaneously, eternally fixed on just mothers worry about their sons. That's what they do. And what to speak of the Braja Gopikas, the young girls of Vrindavan. Their hearts just were there. Their minds were there. Continuously and only. And then when Krishna got to the edge of the Vrindavan forest, he began to play his flute. And then this is the 21st chapter. That describes the consciousness of the gopis when they heard the sound of Krishna's flute. And this comes up very soon. Everywhere, because they were feeling so much separation from Krishna, And Krishna was manifesting in that separation. They were feeling so much love for Krishna and so much brokenheartedness at not being able to see Krishna, be with Krishna, exchange, have loving exchanges with him, that the channel to Krishna's association opened up, and this is the teachings of Mahaprabhu, the channel opens up by missing Krishna, and this is the school that Mahapataparudra has joined by his association with the devotees. The desire was flaming. It was flaming. He was plotting. He was scheming. He was doing Brijbasi politics. He was telling everyone, or if all the devotees ask him, he wasn't just sitting back anyway, whenever Krishna wants. Will we do that with our food? Well, anyway, when the food wants to go in my mouth, God will provide for me. Krishna will provide. He provides for everyone. It's written on my forehead or my palm. I won't even bother opening my mouth. When it will just, okay, I'll open my mouth and just it'll jump in when it wants, when it's my time. The scientists who say everything goes by chance, do they pick up their paychecks? Or do they negotiate their salaries? Do they sign on the dotted line? Or do they leave anything to chance? Nothing to chance. Everything ultimately at Krishna's mercy. But we do our part. So he made his plan. And he continued. By the mercy of all the devotees, one can attain the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And without his mercy, without Krishna's mercy, without Mahaprabhu's mercy, Prataparudra Maharaj says, my kingdom does not appeal to me. If Gaura Hari, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, will not show mercy on me, I shall give up my kingdom. I will become a mendicant, and I will beg from door to door. This was in the letter. And when Bhattacharya received this letter, he became very anxious. He then took the letter and went to the devotees of the Lord. Now, this was not his politics. You know, you can say, we say certain things to evoke a particular mood and a feeling in people. You know, if you don't do this, I'm going to jump off the roof or something. But we're not going to really do it. Haridas Thakur, later on, he says, I'm so fallen, I won't take prasadam with the devotees. And then Mahaprabhu brought him prasadam. He wasn't saying that to get Mahaprabhu to bring him prasadam. He wasn't bluffing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He felt his kingdom was useless. Now, before we understand why this was such a heavy threat, because Mahaprabhu said he's a king, I don't want to see him. The devotees could say, well, anyway, if he becomes a renunciant, it would be good for him. But we should understand the history of what was going on in Jagannath Puri in Orissa at this time, and this is actually history. Mahaprabhu was actually there. And Prataparudra was the king. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was Rajki Pandit. He was the king's pundit. I read a history book one time that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is mentioned in it. And he was studying Navanyaya logic in Mathila. And there was one special book that was the key, the central book in this Navanyaya. And they had it in Mathila. And they kept it. And they wouldn't let anyone make a copy of it or anything because this was their wealth. And everyone was coming to them to get their knowledge. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to that school. He memorized the book. And then he left. And he started a competing school of Navanyaya in Navadvip. Famous historical fact. And then later he was called to Puri. And Prataparudra Maharaj at this time, we see at the end of Adi Lila that Nawab Hussein Shah wanted Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami to maintain his ministers, W. Akash and Shakar Malik, to remain his ministers. And where was he going? Where was he going? He wanted to conquer the world. Where was he headed? To Puri, to fight. And Sanatan Goswami said, you're going to give pain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, it's very much connected to this particular point over here. Because while Prataparudra was the king, he was the king, and he was a powerful king. At the time when he was the king, there was I think his name was Krishnadev Rai or something, in the king of Vijayanagar. He attacked the southern border of his kingdom, of Prataparudra Maharaja's kingdom. And Prataparudra went down to defend it, to fight. He was a king, he was a warrior. He went there to fight. He wasn't a push-button president. He was a warrior. He personally went down there. And he was fighting with the king, and he was defeating him. And Nawab Hussain Shah, to his north, thought that this is a really good time, because there's no compassion or honor. This is Kali Yuga. So he thought, well, the king isn't fighting in the south. This is the perfect time to fight, to attack the north. So he attacked. And Nawab Hussain Shah, and that's when Sanatan Goswami wouldn't go. He attacked, and he was advancing all the way, and he was destroying temples. And he had reached Puri. He had gone through Katak. He had actually reached Puri. And Kanaya Kantia writes down that they had to, one of the associates of Mahaprabhu writes, they had a passage, a secret underground passage where they took the deities, Lord Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, out. It's all historical facts. Because Nawab Hussain Shah was right at the gates of Puri, and they took Jagannath out. And they brought him to Choka Lake in Orissa. And they hid him near the Lokanath part of Puri. And then they brought him to the lake. And there was an island in the lake, and they put him in a cave. The deities in the island in the lake. It was real. And then Prataparudra, he had to leave fighting in the south to fight with Nawab Hussain Shah, who was in Puri. And by the time he got to Puri with his armies, Nawab Hussain Shah took off, retreated completely. And Prataparudra went after him. He went after him because he had attacked Lord Jagannath's city. And he surrounded him. He hid himself in some fort or something. And he surrounded him. And this is what kingly life is. And then one of Prataparudra's own men did a rebellion at this time. Putsch. How do you say it? Putsch. Yes, he started a putsch at this time in Katak. So Prataparudra had to come back to Katak to stop that. And they made some, anyway, we are from the same family. Why should we fight? Because you never give me this. Okay, you can take this now. It's all right. You take this. You can rule this part. And he's saying, the king who's like defending, and during this time he had a dream also, Lord Jagannath chastised him for being so careless. So he had such an intimate relationship with Lord Jagannath, and Lord Jagannath had such an intimate relationship with him. This is history. And the king who is the protector of Puri, this powerful Gajapati, he's saying, I'm going to give up everything and become a mendicant. And therefore, in the midst of this type of fighting in politics, and this mostly happened while Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, but then when Mahaprabhu finally tries to go to Vrindavan and heads towards Bengal, there's that section where where he said, this is very dangerous. We have to make a treaty for allow you to passage. You know that part? I think it's chapter 16. Yeah, chapter 16. Because this is what's going on. And this king is saying, I'm going to give up everything and become a mendicant if I can't see Mahaprabhu. That is why the devotees are in so much anxiety. He's the protector of Lord Jagannath, of the culture. So he became very anxious, and he took the letter and went to the devotees of the Lord. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya met with all the devotees and described the king's wishes. Then he presented the letter to all of them for inspection. And upon reading the letter, everyone was astonished to see that King Prataparudra had so much devotion for the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nothing was important to him. If this consciousness, if this mood, tatra loyam api mulam ekalam, will take birth in our consciousness, or it has taken birth, or else we wouldn't be here. But it maybe it's seed, it's a seed now. We should water the seed, we should protect the seed. We should shravanadi jal, ihan mali nitya sechi, sechi. We should sprinkle the water always on our creeper of devotion. With the water of hearing and chanting about Krishna, and let it blossom, let it blossom, let it bear its fruit of prema. And when we have that shelter, when we have that shelter, then the soul is home. Otherwise, we are just strangers in a strange land, not here. But we're wandering, Brahmanda Brahmati. We are wandering, wandering on the tree of material life, looking for, trying to peck at the different fruits that this tree is offering us. But it is a reflection only of reality, a reflection of reality. And if we become convinced of this one thing, then the greatest step forward has been taken in our spiritual life. So when the devotees read the letter, everyone was astonished to see his focus. Surely. So what is attracting the attention of the devotees to make their plea on his behalf? It doesn't say even, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj doesn't say, because the devotees were afraid of Hussein Shah coming and attacking the city of Jagannath Puri, even though this was the political reality. They don't say because they were fearing that they will intercede on behalf of the king. So what is it? We ask the question, what is it that's going to cause the devotees who are intimate with Mahaprabhu, who are closer, to speak on our behalf? He says, when they see that the king had so much devotion, we can't do it, but we have to do our part. Our part is necessary, but insufficient. But it is necessary. It is insufficient in and of itself, but it is necessary. Like the small boy who decides he wants to lift the heavy weight. He makes his attempt, and it is so far beyond his capacity. But when he, because of his sincere attempt, his father comes and says, why don't you try one more time? Just try one more time. And by the father's strength, the weight gets lifted. But without the boy's sincere, desire-filled attempt, the father's strength isn't evoked. We have our part to do. And we have to depend on Krishna for his part. We have to, but we should do our part and do it well. Well means with sincerity and devotion. The devotees gave their opinion and said, the Lord would never meet the king. And if we requested him to do so, the Lord would surely feel very unhappy. So, do they want to make the Lord unhappy? No. They don't want to make the Lord unhappy. Rather, the devotees want to make the Lord happy. That's what it means to be a devotee. So we will move forward on this point, but let me just take a step backwards 2 days. When our Prabhu asked about that statement I had made about the... That was you, yes? About we shouldn't disappoint Krishna. Was that you? Yes. So I found the reference, and this means I got it wrong, but by a little bit, perhaps. What Prabhupada actually said was, don't do anything which will make Krishna unhappy. Now, because it's only a 3-minute segment, I would like to play it, what Prabhupada says here. Because it's important and it's powerful. This is probably the easiest way to do it, because I want to stop it. Because I don't have it. If we had it in everyone's hand, you could all read it. But so I'll read it. We'll hear Prabhupada's words and then I'll read them after. And I'll stop it. We'll try. Okay. Yeah, we'll just...
The world is full of rascals and fools.
That's Prabhupada. The world is full of rascals and fools. We'll start with Prabhupada's signature.
Fools, we have to very cautiously and intelligently, we have to make promise a spiritual life.
Could you hear? We have to very cautiously and intelligently make progress in spiritual life.
Don't take it very insignificantly. We should be very much careful. Otherwise, there is fall down. And once fall down means a gap of millions of years. We have got this human form of life to complete Krishna consciousness. But if you are not serious, then the gap will be millions of years.
Don't take it very insignificantly. We should be very much careful. Otherwise, there is fall down. And once fall down means a gap of millions of years. You have got this human form of life to complete Krishna consciousness. But if you are not serious, then again the gap will be millions of years.
Therefore, our duty is tadero charana sevi bhakta saneva. We should live with the devotees and be engaged in the service of the acharya. Acharya mang bijanya nava manne sukarichit. One should understand acharya as Krishna himself. Don't disregard him. Jasya divi paravakti, jasa divi tatha guru. These are the things. So we must be very cautious.
Therefore our duty is tandera charana sevi bhakta sanivas. We should live with the devotees and be engaged in the service of the acharyas. Acharyamam vijnanayam nava manyeta karhichit. One should understand the acharya as Krishna himself. Don't disregard him. Yasya deve parabhaktir yata devi tata guru. These are the statements. So we must be very cautious.
Just like here also, the Brahmadaya, big demigod, they could not pacify, appease the Lord.
So this is, the great demigods could not pacify or appease the Lord. This is Prabhupada speaking about Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, where the demigods are requesting Prahlad, little Prahlad, to come and pacify Lord Nisringadev, who was so angry.
Lord, you are saying,
he was so angry.
Even Sudadayosandhi, Brahma Rudra, Purusha, big, big personality, Rudra. Now, Vaitum, Naivetum, Asakan, Vendu. They could not pacify him.
They could not pacify him.
Sangaram, Sudurasadam, very, very difficult. Once we are condemned by Krishna, it is very, very difficult to rise up again. Mura janmani janmani. Life after life, we shall be condemned. That is our punishment. So don't do anything which will make Krishna on us.
Once they could not pacify him, and Samrambam Sudarasadam. Sudarasadam. Very, very difficult. Once we are condemned by Krishna, it is very, very difficult to rise up again. Muda Janmani Janmani. Life after life, we shall be condemned. That is our punishment. So don't do anything which will make Krishna unhappy.
Simply engage yourself in the service of the Lord. Very simple thing. Manmana Bhavaman Bhakta Bhajyaji Mahatamas Guru. Simply always think of him. Do not think anything else. Sarva Pahali Minir Bhaktam. Anna Vilasita Sullam. Just try to maintain your service toward Krishna. There is 24 hours engagement. And try to follow it, do not neglect it. That will make your life successful. Thank you very much.
Yes, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.1, first verse of the ninth canto of the ninth chapter of the seventh canto, Mayapur, February 8th, 1976. It's the last 3 minutes and 11 seconds of the lecture. February 8th, Mayapur. Seventh canto, ninth chapter, first verse. 76. So the devotees didn't want to make Mahaprabhu unhappy. Rather, the natural mood of a devotee, they want to see the Lord happy. He is their Lord. It is love. It is not official. It is not official. It's relationship. And in one sense, that's what we talk about, avoiding the aparads, the offenses against the holy name. And one way of looking at the offenses, a simple way, is that they are insults to Krishna and they cause pain to his heart, even though on one level Krishna cannot experience pain. He's Satchidananda Vigraha. But on another level, that's what offense means. We're chanting his name, and he's given us Sarva Shakti, all the potency, and we turn our back on him, and our minds are thinking about everything else other than Krishna. So that's an insult. An offense. Pramada. So it's pretty cool. It's against the actual mood of a devotee, of devotion. Because a devotee means devotional service. An act performed with devotion for the pleasure of another, for our Lord. So the devotees, after hearing this, they gave their opinion. The Lord would never meet the king. And if we request him to do so, he will surely feel unhappy. And Savabhauma Bhattacharya said, because they have, how is he going to do it? There's contradictory things. The king wants to see the Lord, and Savabhauma Bhattacharya has personal experience that when he brought up the topic even, Mahaprabhu said, if you bring this up again, I'm leaving Puri. And yet the king, so much devotion, he's going to die if he can't see Mahaprabhu. And the king has taken the problem and given it to them. How are you going to put these two things together, these seemingly contradictory things? So Savabhauma Bhattacharya is very intelligent. And this, we have so many contradictory parts of our life sometimes. It feels like that. So how to put them together, not to give up, but try to somehow or another put them together so that the real purpose that we want to achieve is accomplished, which is love for Krishna. And also, of course, the devotees, they know what Mahaprabhu's mood really is. He's teaching on one level, speaking on one level, but his heart is open. And again, he's come to Puri to give his mercy to these three personalities, specifically, and one of those personalities is the king. So how to work this out? Savabhauma Bhattacharya has an idea. He says, we shall once again go to the Lord, but we shall not request him to meet the king. Rather, we shall simply describe the good behavior of the king to him. Having reached this decision, they all went to the place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they had a great plan, and they stood in front of Mahaprabhu, and none of them could say anything. After they arrived at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's place, Mahaprabhu saw them, and they were all silently standing there. And he said, what have you come here to say? I see you want to say something, but you do not speak. What is the reason? Nityananda Prabhu said, we want to tell you something. Although we cannot stay here without speaking, we are still very much afraid to say it. We want to submit something before you that may or may not be befitting. And he took the whole plan they had made and threw it out, and he just said it. Unless he sees you, the king of Orissa will become a mendicant. The king has decided to become a mendicant and accept the sign of a mendicant by wearing an ivory earring. He does not want to enjoy his kingdom without seeing the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The king also expressed his desire to see the moon-like face of Sri Chaitanya. To his eyes' full satisfaction, because he's seen Mahaprabhu from the roof. And rather than that satisfying him, it just simply caused him to desire more deeply, more intensely, more incessantly. He would like to raise the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart. He wanted to place Mahaprabhu's lotus feet in his heart. Kabe habe bolo se din hama. The first line of that song, when will that day be mine? Aparada guchi, sudanama ruchi. When will this feeling naturally arise in me? When? When I give up, I'm free from aparads. Aparada guchi, sudanam ruchi. And then I will get a taste for your holy name. And then everything will happen. That is the beginning. And that taste will expand until it completely takes over our consciousness. Kabhi habhi bolo seydinama. This is proper desiring. When will that day be mine? I'm living in this world like an insect. Why is that expression used by Mahaprabhu's himself? Because an insect, at least from our perspective, it comes into this world, the fly comes, puts out its tongue, flies here and there, it's a nuisance, and then it's gone, and no one cares. That it took its birth at all has no significance. I live in this world like an insect with no significance unless I come to this point. Kabe, kabe habe bola. Janiya sunia bisha kainu. I know this. I have heard it. And still, I drink poison. The poison of materialistic life. My consciousness filled with these desires. My body following the wild horses of my senses. Madly drinking the poison of petty, insignificant, fly-like sense enjoyment. Like an insect. When will in your heart will your mercy shine? Kabhi habhi bolo Sayyidina Mar. He wants to raise. This is manasiksha. Feeding the mind proper desires, teaching us how to deal with the rascal mind. In such a way that proper desires take over. The sun of your mercy rising means that darkness will be dissipated. We should try to make Krishna happy. That's what it means to be a devotee. Let us become devotees. Let us pray to Giriraj. Ask each and every Vaishnava to bless us. And we should do our best. We should, as I heard one devotee say, we should clean up our life. We should pray like anything. We should have this desire burn brightly. We should pray like anything for Krishna's mercy. And then we should do our part. We should clean up our life and make our life attune our life, have the goal, attune our consciousness, our desires to the goal, and then attune our life to be harmonious with what we really want. The king's time is coming. All his desires will be fulfilled. But it will take its time. But all his desires will be fulfilled. Now when Mahaprabhu heard this, he didn't melt immediately. But that will happen. Time. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was certainly softened. Mind, the word here is mana. Mind also means heart. But externally, he wished to speak some harsh words. I can understand that you all desire to take me to Cuttack to see the king. Prabhupada's purport was saying, because it is your desire. What he was really saying is, but because these great souls, they speak crookedly. Parokshavad, in the words of the Bhagavatam of Krishna himself, in hidden and deep ways. I can understand that you all desire to take me to Cuttack to see the king. What he was saying is, because it's your desires, I'll even go to Cuttack to see the king. What to speak of spiritual advancement? More harsh words, more saying no on the outside. But his time is coming, the king's time is coming. But he's waiting for one other thing, one other element, which will come in the next chapter. This chapter is the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. Chapter 12. But for the king, for Mahaprabhu's heart to be fully softened and melted, there is, even after he said you'll get the mercy of to Ramananda Roy, the king will certainly get Krishna's mercy, and after the devotees are pleading with him, and he's still maintaining this hardness until one other thing happens. And what is that one other thing? The sweeping of the road. He becomes a humble, menial, insignificant servant. That, at least theoretically, is within everyone's capacity. We should know that we are insignificant servants. That is who we are. Jivera Srupoi Krishna Nitya Das, Mamai Vangso, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We are servants. Next question. Who am I? I'm a servant. Next question. Who's my master? And then next question. We answer that question. What is my service? And then just do our service. Prabhupada's service was to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Maharaj Prataparudra's service was to sweep the road. And he had other services, obviously, too, wherever he could serve. And what is my service? That is the question we should ask ourselves. And we should do it humbly. As servants, as offerings. But Mahaprabhu at this point was hard. What to speak of spiritual advancement? If I do this, all the people will blaspheme me. And what to speak of all the people? Damodar will criticize me. I shall not meet the king at the request of all the devotees. But I shall do so if Damodar will give me permission. Because Damodar was, Mahaprabhu was indirectly chastising Damodar. And Damodar immediately replied, "My Lord, you are the fully independent Supreme Personality of Godhead." This, at this point, the devotees, when the pressure of the Lord comes on them, the same thing Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when they, out of their love, they can't let Mahaprabhu leave when he wants to go to Vrindavan. They're tricking him one way or another. And then when the Lord said, "Stop," and they say, "You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are completely independent. Who can stop you from doing anything you want? Since everything is known to you, you know what is permissible and what is not permissible. I am merely an insignificant jiva, so what power do I have to give directions to you? By your own personal choice," he knows the Lord's mind, "you will meet with the king, and I shall see it. The king is very much attached to you, and you are feeling affection and love for him. This I can understand by the virtue of the king's affection for you, because no one can feel affection for Krishna unless that affection is a gift of Krishna. Thus I can understand by the virtue of the king's affection for you, you will touch him." And then he gives such a nice definition of the nature of the king, of the Supreme Lord. "Although you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and are completely independent, still you are dependent on the love and affection of your devotees. That is your nature. That is the nature of the Lord. This is the intimacy. This is the intimacy of the Lord's relationship with his devotees. The devotees are controlled by the Lord, and the Lord is controlled by his devotees. Okay, we'll stop here. Another 4 minutes. Any questions or comments? Maharaj?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Thank you for this very well presented lecture. I have a question to this segment of Srila Prabhupada's lecture that one fall down means a gap of millions of years before you get another chance. I must say I did hear this when I arrived at Govindakund, and I was innocently eating my noon meal, and afterwards the spoon fell out of my mouth when I heard this. It is such a statement which somehow does not have that free, merciful, ever giving a chance tone of Prabhupada's other voice, which we like to hear. It really is, and if Krishna
which
condemns
we could also
you,
say we prefer to hear.
Yeah, which we prefer to hear, yes. And it doesn't really give any leeway to any little bit of freedom of the mind and of the action, because, you know, does the fall down start and where does it end, you know? And then it says, if Krishna once condemns you, wow, that is really... And he, it seems he talks to the devotees.
Oh, he was talking to you.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah. Now, could you maybe after... this lecture has totally deconstructed my last hopes to enjoy in this material world. And I have fallen on the ground. What will you do to again bring your retreat partner into working order? Hare Krishna. My question is, he doesn't speak about the demons. There is a statement of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita that the demons are condemned to forever and ever take their birth in demoniac species. He really talks about devotees. One fall down means a gap of millions of years. I mean, these are many lifetimes he speaks about.
Yes. We are dealing...
with a pure devotee. Yeah.
No, no. You want... Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm only now stumbling. I thought that even if a devotee is attached, if he continues to hear and chant, slowly his material attachments go, you know, by and by, and he will become Krishna conscious. I took shelter in that understanding. Hare Krishna. By the way, I'm putting this question as an intellectual question. What I want to say is, I don't intend to have a fall down. I just want to know. How do you consolidate this with our merciful Kripa Sindhu, Dayamayi, Karunamayi, Shrimati Radharani, and the spiritual master, the Karuna Shakti of the Lord? It has a different
and
sound.
This is what the Karuna Shakti of the Lord is saying very strongly. Because he's in the position of Acharya. And the Acharya's business is to teach. And teaching isn't just one-sided. Teaching has many facets, obviously. And sometimes the teacher or the parent will will pat the child on the head. Just 1 second. He'll pat the child on the head, and sometimes he'll take out the parent. He'll threaten him, and you're going to. I won't give you food for 1 week or something like that. So all aspects of the training are there. That's one point. And this is what it means to be a teacher. That the teacher has, that every teacher has many tricks up his sleeve, not only one trick, because the students are very tricky also. So sometimes one thing will be effective and sometimes another. So the particular circumstance that caused Prabhupada to bring out this particular aspect of his nature, I cannot say exactly, but I can say that it was an aspect of his nature. So when the parents or the parent or the teacher chastise the child, is he actually condemning him? Because that's what Prabhupada says literally, since you are asking a theological question, we will answer in a theological way also. Once we are condemned by Krishna, it is very, very difficult to rise up again. Krishna says the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita also. Tadam dvishata kuraran sansareshu naradama. That if someone has the mood of an asura, demonic mood, Krishna says that I send him down for countless births. So one could ask the same question of that person, of Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, interestingly enough, does specifically ask that question. You could change his heart. Why, instead of changing his heart, you're all powerful, why are you choosing to condemn him and make him take birth after birth after birth in demoniac species of life? Why don't you change his heart? And Krishna's answer in a simple way is, I don't have an inclination to, because he's demonic. Yayatam mam prapadyante. He turns his back on me, I turn my back on him. Then the question is further asked, as you're asking you, but how about his devotees? Once we are condemned by Krishna, it is very, very difficult to rise up again. So will you condemn your devotee or aspiring devotee if he make some blunder? And I'll answer it on more than one level, but one level I personally heard Prabhupada answer this question on in Melbourne in 1975. When one devotee, I don't know who this person was, I never had seen him before, but I remember he attended Prabhupada's class and he had long hair. And in those days, if you had long hair and were living outside the temple, you weren't a devotee. And if you were shaved up, unless you were a Mataji, and were living in the temple, you were a devotee. Things were very black and white, as you remember. So this it must have been a devotee, though, but he had long hair, and he asked Prabhupada this peculiar question. And he asked him, Prabhupada, I see that some of your disciples have fallen down and they were Brahmin initiated and then they've come back and they're re-engaged in their previous position. Don't you think it would be a better idea if you engage them in some humble service first, like washing pots or something like that? So, how is Prabhupada going to... How is he going to respond to this question? You know, on one level, it was who is asking it? You know, we don't... And another level is, who does he think he is who's asking it and telling Prabhupada a better way that he should act? And third level, it's such an interesting question. And Prabhupada's answer said, it depends on the decision of the spiritual master, whether someone is innocent or guilty. It was even more deeply to the heart of the question. Innocence or guilt, it depends on the dispensation, the reading of the spiritual master, like the judge. It's up to him to judge. And then he said, it's not up to you to judge, basically. This is what he was saying. You're saying he's guilty in this and this and this. But it's not your position to judge. So one and another answer to this question is that, referring back to the point, once we are condemned by Krishna, it is very, very difficult to rise up again. But whether Krishna exactly condemns us or doesn't condemn us is up to Krishna and his representative. And that, what causes them to act in one way or another, there are some different principles that are at work there. But ultimately, it is up to the spiritual master and Krishna whether they actually do condemn us or not, or how many chances they choose to give us, or just how they wish to deal with us. That is up to them. And then a third answer to the question. There's one story that I heard. It was on the Prabhupada Memories, where there was one devotee was doing in the early days of the construction of the Juhu Temple. That was such a struggle, and there was this one devotee, a local man, who had joined, but he wasn't very serious. And at nights he was staying in the Brahmachari ashram, maybe it was rainy season or something, and you know, he was going out and he was sleeping on the beach, and he was becoming the disciple of some yogi. I think Tamal Krishnamaraj describes this story in his memories. And he was learning some yogic feats from the yogi of how to, I don't know, pass a coin from through your ears to coming out the other side. It sounds a little more like a magician to me than a yogi, but he was learning this, and it was really disturbing Tamal Krishnamaraj because he was destroying the atmosphere in the ashram. So he kept complaining to Prabhupada about him. You know this story? He kept complaining to Prabhupada about him and complaining, you know, and Prabhupada said, give him some time. And finally, he was smoking cigarettes and living in the ashram and sometimes in the ashram and not. And he said, Prabhupada, you have to get him out. He spoke like that. And Prabhupada said, you know, enough is enough. I don't know. It wasn't maybe telling Prabhupada so heavily. And finally, Prabhupada said, okay, tell him my mercy has run out. He has to leave. So Tamal Krishnamaraj, His Holiness Tamal Krishnamaraj, in his manager mode, was very happy. And he told him, get out. He got rid of him. I mean, after all, this was the Brahmachari ashram. And then later he came back to him and said, Prabhupada, after he was out, is there an actual limit to how merciful you are? You are, and did your mercy actually run out on him? And Prabhupada said, no. So, even if Krishna does condemn us, if Prabhupada speaks on our behalf, this, let me, you know the story? Were you there?
No, I wasn't there, but I have another story.
I also had another one too, but yeah, you can go ahead with yours. There was another one with one of Prabhupada's servants who was not following. And then he kept coming back. The only thing he could actually do in Krishna consciousness was serve Prabhupada. And he went away and he came back, and Prabhupada said the same thing to him. My mercy has run out on you. Go away. And then next thing, he was serving Prabhupada again. Go ahead. You have to hold that little thing that allows your voice to be recorded.
Is it on? Yes.
It's on.
Well, I was first thinking that he gives according to consciousness and time and place and who the person is. So first
a little louder, please.
For one instance, in Vrindavan in 76. Okay, can you hear now? Okay. In 76 in Vrindavan, Palika and I were cooking and for Prabhupada. And so when we came in to take the tray away, his thali and katoris probably were sitting there. And within seconds of eating, there's always ants. The ants are coming. And so I'm standing there next to her. She's taking and Prabhupada's looking. And usually when he'd finish eating, he's sitting and picking his teeth with the toothpick. And he's watching every move you make. And so we're putting everything on the thali, and she's taking a cloth and wiping all these ants away. And Prabhupada's picking and he's looking and he said, if you simply, they will go. He said, it is best to kill as little as possible. So I'm standing there and take note. That gets emblazed in my mind. 2 months later, I'm down in Varda with Prabhupada alone. But not alone, but I'm the only cook. And after his lunch, I come in to take everything away. He's sitting there with a toothpick, and he's watching, and he's pouring. There's crumbs everywhere, all under the dhoti, all over here, and there's ants. And so I'm wiping different areas, and I'm actually shaking the crumbs off and trying to get them, and he's pointing to where I'm missing. And then all of a sudden, I see ants, and I start going. And he goes, what are you doing? Prabhupada, I was very pleased. I was like, I'm making the ants go. He said, simply wipe them away. So I was like, ooh, okay. So there you have it. On one level, it could be contradictory. But then you have to understand what he's saying, what he's teaching. It is the teacher again.
Yeah.
One was in Vrindavan, one was out of Vrindavan. We were at a Gita conference in Varda. I don't know. I wouldn't presume to say that. It goes many more levels.
Yeah. In Tokyo, I saw that Prabhupada, on his Vyasa Puja, there were ants crawling up the face of his picture. There was a big painting of Prabhupada, and there were ants crawling up on it. And we were, so we wanted to move them away. And Prabhupada said, no. No, one thing you should know about Prabhupada, that he didn't answer from the level that was predictable by a person with finite consciousness. You can never understand where the point. You could never, because you answer a question. You know, okay, here's the typical answer, right? You would never be able to predict how Prabhupada would answer anything. His consciousness was clear, no fog. No passion, no ignorance, and ultimately no even goodness, material goodness. But he would answer. Yeah. What was the question?
In the situation of a fall down, Krishna states,
if someone is a nanyabak, if someone is unfocused. But this is more of a... We're talking here about Prabhupada the teacher, too. He's telling his disciples something. What is he telling his disciples? So when you say, if we take the point that he doesn't really mean it, that he's really ultimately merciful and he's just telling them to be a little more serious, then where will we keep the instruction? Where will it enter our heart, become afraid of doing something wrong? See, and that's one of the things that one immediately learned when dealing with Prabhupada, is every little thing he said, you take completely seriously. Even though he may say it in a light way, you don't take it in a light way. What to speak of if he said something as earth and heart-shattering as this, to say, anyway, Prabhupada's just teaching us, he wants us to become a little more serious. Prabhupada, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Nityananda Prabhu was afraid to make these statements in front of Mahaprabhu. Nityananda was afraid to say this. Do you have any experiences in your life like that? I do. You may think this and that, but when you'd stand in front of Prabhupada, you'd have to be, you wanted to say things that were proper and not going to be displeasing to him. Do you have that experience?
Well, he would say, no difficulties.
There were no difficulties.
You
couldn't say anymore.
You went out of the room.
When dealing with persons of this caliber, different laws are at work. We're used to dealing in different ways, but when dealing with people of this caliber, of this weight, that's the right weight, our consciousness was different. And now we walk around in the bubble of our significance, the illusory bubble of our significance. But in the presence of Mahaprabhu and in the presence of Prabhupada, we were only aware of our insignificance, and it was heavy. And therefore, even Nityananda, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he was the guru of the king, and he was completely shaken. Therefore, let's not talk directly about this point, that he should meet the king, because Mahaprabhu said, if you do this, I'm leaving. So, but still, something a little indirect. But I think we have to give proper. It's such an interesting topic, and it was an important and good question. But we should respect Krishna in the form Krishna says, "Kalosman, I am time." So we should offer him respect. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Giriraj Bhaktivinda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinda ki jai.